This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
We have not been good stewards. We've been overfishing. We have used unsustainable practices. And we have to do something about this.
Hi, you're listening to Green Pulse, and I'm Nirmal Ghosh, co-host along with David Fogarty. In this episode, I speak with veteran Singapore diplomat and international negotiator, Ambassador-at-Large Tommy Koh. Currently also a professor of law at the National University of Singapore, Ambassador Koh's career spans international law, diplomacy, international relations, and the arts. He has held many offices. The list is long. Among others, he has been Singapore's ambassador to the United States, permanent representative to the United Nations. He was president of the third UN Conference on the Law of the Sea and chairman of the preparatory committee and main committee at the 1992 Earth Summit. Professor, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
Professor, we hear and read a lot about climate change, but we really face a confluence of ecological crises. How would you describe and assess the gravity of these various challenges?
The world's attention is focused on climate change. But climate change is only one of three ecological crises. The other two are a crisis in biodiversity and a crisis in our oceans. So I would like this up today with you to talk not just about climate change, but also about biodiversity and about the oceans.
You were president of the third UN Conference on the Law of the Sea, which produced the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, which came into force in 1994. What has been the record under UNCLOS in terms of dealing with the threats of warming seas, toxification, plastic, unsustainable fishing, and so forth?
I would say on the legal side, the convention has been a great success. I think the whole world, including the country that's not a party, the United States, regard UNCLOS as the authoritative statement of modern law of the sea. That's a good thing. What's not so good is that we had not foreseen this when we were negotiating the convention, that we were facing a major problem with global warming. And global warming affects the oceans because the oceans absorb CO2 and other greenhouse gases, in the process of which the oceans become warmer and also more acidic. So the warming and more acidic ocean is doing harm to biodiversity in the ocean, especially to coral reefs. Coral reefs are very important to the world because they are the nursery and habitat of fish, you know. And the sad news is that we have lost maybe 50% of the coral reefs of the world. A major coral reef is the Australian Great Barrier Reef. And according to some scientists, about 90% of the Great Barrier Reef has been bleached because of warming and acidity. Closer to Singapore, we have the Great Coral Triangle from Indonesia to Papua and so on, you know. And I think we should try to do what we can to protect these coral reefs.
And on plastics, that's also...
There are two other problems in the oceans.
Yeah.
One is the presence of large amounts of marine plastic debris in the ocean. And this has become a very serious problem. In fact, the Food and Agricultural Organization has warned the world that if we don't do something about this, soon there'll be more plastic than fish in the ocean. So that's the bad news. The good news is that we have a workaround to this problem. And under the auspices of the UN Environment Programme, there's an ongoing negotiation to produce a convention to deal with the plastic problem. A third problem I want to talk about is fishery. Fish is very important to the world because it's the most important source of protein for the people of the world. And we have not been good stewards of the world's fishery. We've been overfishing. We have used unsustainable practices. The result, according to FAO, is that about 90% of the major fisheries have been depleted. And we have to do something about this. Recently, the WTO ministers had a meeting, and on the agenda was an agreement by members of WTO to phase out subsidies for their fishing industry. Unfortunately, we couldn't come to an agreement. So you ask, what's wrong with subsidy? Giving the fishing industry subsidy means the fishing industry building bigger fishing fleets. And if you total up the fishing fleets of the world, their capacity to catch fish is beyond the sustainable limit of the ocean. So that's a problem.
So back in 1992, the Earth Summit, one of the results of that was the UN Convention on Biodiversity, which came into force in 1995.
Yes.
You were instrumental in coaxing that consensus. But the record since then has not been very encouraging. And in fact, you have written that from 1995 to 2022,
It
was quote-unquote disastrous.
It was, yeah.
So if you could elaborate a bit on that.
Unfortunately, unlike climate change, the loss of biodiversity has not captured the imagination of the world. And if you speak to the man or woman on the street, he or she is unable to link the loss of biodiversity to their individual welfare and interest. But actually, there's a link. My starting point is that we humans are part of the natural world. We cannot live apart from nature. We are part of nature. And if we don't take care of the biodiversity and the natural functioning of the ecosystem, this will ultimately affect our health and our well-being. That's my main point. So the situation is so bad that some scientists have called this era the Great Sixth Extinction. The fifth extinction took place 65 million years ago when the Earth was struck by an asteroid and, as you know, resulted in the death of the dinosaurs and other species. So this is very serious. Last December, there was a meeting of the states which are parties to the Convention on Biodiversity. This conference was supposed to have been held in Kunming in China, but for some reason, the Chinese were not able to host the conference, so it was transferred to Montreal. So at the end of the conference, they adopted the Kunming-Montreal biodiversity framework. It's very ambitious. If I could just mention two collective goals or objectives. One, the countries in Montreal agreed that they will try to conserve 30% of their land, their coastal areas, and the oceans. This is a huge goal, you know. The other objective is to reduce by 10 times the loss of biodiversity. My skeptical wife asked me, how can you be sure we have achieved this target when all the previous targets were not achieved? I have no answer. I have no answer except to say that hopefully we have reached a tipping point and the governments and peoples of the world have awoken to the danger to themselves with this unprecedented rate of loss of biodiversity.
Acknowledging your hope that we have reached this tipping point, do you think there's a danger or risk still with the parts of the world embroiled in wars that governments are distracted by geopolitical competition?
Of course. Of course. I mean, it's a question of mind share, right? So I would say most of the minds of the leaders of the world are focused by the Russia versus Ukraine war and by the Israel versus Palestinian conflict. So there's very little time left for people to focus on other issues. So there's a danger that the achievements of the recent past, whether on climate change, biodiversity, the oceans, you know, that we will find a retreat.
That's a worry, certainly.
Yeah.
Going back to the Earth Summit, also adopted the famous UN FCCC, the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. And that was really the beginning of our collective efforts to slow down global warming. And then came the 2015 Paris Agreement. Yeah. Yet, we are falling short. What is lacking and where?
It's a difficult problem. And the problem began with the Industrial Revolution 200 years ago. We didn't realize then that the tremendous economic progress we were making as a result of the Industrial Revolution have a downside. We were relying on fossil fuels for energy. We did not realize that the burning of fossil fuels resulted in the accumulation of CO2 in the atmosphere. As a result of the accumulation of CO2 and other greenhouse gases, the planet has been slowly warming. We are now aware that this is a threat to us. And there's a collective will to try to limit the rise of global temperature to 1.5 degrees centigrade. Is this still achievable? There's no agreement. Many of my scientist friends think that we've lost it, that we're still emitting more and more CO2 rather than less. So the pessimistic scientists are telling me at the current rate of CO2 emission, by 2030, we're likely to exceed 1.5, maybe reach 2 or 3 degrees. The optimistic scientists are saying that it's not too late. If between now, 2024 to 2030, the countries of the world, especially the large emitters, can summon the political will to reduce drastically their emission of CO2, 1.5 degrees is still achievable.
Still achievable.
Yeah. As a born optimist, I want to believe in a positive rather than a negative.
Absolutely.
But I must admit, I'm not sure.
Not sure. So after such a long and storied career in international environmental negotiations, I'm curious as to your thoughts on the relationship between humans and nature. Yeah. And also, a second question, what is your message to younger generations, rural and urban, who are being thrust into dealing with such a fundamental, profound change?
I think my message to everyone is that for too long, man has been making war against nature, and they must stop. This is why, together with two colleagues, I've edited a book whose title is Peace with Nature. I think the time has come when instead of making war, we must make peace with nature. We must have the aspiration to live in harmony with nature. So that's my message.
I'm glad you brought up that book because it's very pertinent to Singapore, where we're sitting in Singapore right now. And Singapore has done a remarkable job in maintaining its green spaces. Yet it is an extremely densely populated island. How did Singapore pull it off and what example can it give to the rest of the world?
I would go back to our founding Prime Minister Lee Kuan Yew and give him a lot of credit. I once jokingly teased him and said, "You are a green politician before the term was invented." As you know, he doesn't like accolades. You know, I said, no. He brushed me off, you know. I said, it's true. I said, you know, from the beginning of our industrialization policy, he was determined not to accept polluting industries. He was determined that we will grow rapidly, but we will maintain environmental standards in Singapore. And there's a famous story of a very major investor coming to EDB and said, "I have $1 billion investment. I want to site it in what is today Sentosa Island." But the anti-pollution unit in the Prime Minister's office said no, that this is a polluting investment. It will ruin Singapore. And PM overruled EDB and rejected the investment. So I think from the beginning of our industrial policy, we gave equal emphasis to economic growth and to protection of the environment. So I think that we're lucky in that our founding Prime Minister had this vision, you know. I once attended a conference in another Asian country, which I will not name. And one of the speakers at the conference was the former Prime Minister, who had done a very good job growing the economy. So somebody in the audience asked him, said, "Prime Minister, looking back, do you have any regrets?" And he was very frank. He said, "Yes, I have one regret." He said, "I've totally ignored the environment, that I polluted the environment. And now we are paying the price of trying to remedy what we've done wrong," you know. So that to me was a very important statement by the former PM of this country, you know. So we were lucky in that we didn't make that mistake. We rejected the rhetoric, which was very popular in the third world. Let's grow rich first, and then we'll clean up the environment. Lee Kuan Yew said, no, let's grow in harmony with the environment.
Professor Koh, thank you very much for joining me on Green Pulse. That was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
That wraps it up for Green Pulse. Once again, I'm Nirmal Ghosh. Thanks for listening.
Send your feedback to podcast@sbh.com.sg. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or within our Straits Times app. Thanks for listening.